You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
We've got another 20 minutes or so of this hour left, and I'm joined in the studio by one of the country's best investigative reporters, Pieter Meiburg. Pieter, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. And I asked the producers whether we can focus on the process story. I mean, it's just it's an absolute minefield. Yesterday, of course, news broke that the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa's board has been dissolved by Parliament. And that is something that has cheesed off the now ex-PRASA board chairperson, Popo Molefe, who believes that the transport minister, Depiwa Peters' decision to fire the board is likely an attempt to protect former acting CEO Collins Letswalo. Pieter, were you surprised that the board has been dissolved?
Do you know what? Actually, it's a bit of a disturbing development, I suppose, but I wouldn't say I'm surprised. I think the ructions between the minister's office and Mr. Molefe's office started to come to the fore sort of mid-2016-ish, when the minister started making kind of the first noises that she's not happy with these kind of ongoing probes into PRASA's multi-billion rand contracts. So, yeah, the fact that it ended up at this point is not too surprising to me. I think it was going to come to a head and somebody was going to have to back down somehow. So this is what happened.
Everyone is claiming to be the good guy in this story. And I'm thinking, Ash, I'm just an average Joe following this news story. How do I know who to believe? And it's so uncanny. I mean, Popo, including on our platform, has been saying things that are almost identical to what we've heard the acting CEO Colin says. Colin says, yeah, people don't like me because I'm actually fighting corruption. Now Popo's saying, yeah, they don't really want this board because we are actually fighting corruption. I'm thinking to myself, these two claims are mutually exclusive. Willich. Who is lying here?
Dude, I'm also very wary of hagiographies. I don't like sort of sugarcoating history and sort of projecting the one as the villain and the other as a saint, which is why I prefer to stick to the facts on the ground here. And I think the core issue here is that under Mr. Molefe's board, there has been these ongoing probes and they have been getting close to some very sensitive information when it comes to money's flowing out of these massive contracts from PRASA to people who are very politically connected. And I think that is kind of the narrative I'm focusing on this stage. I believe in investigative journalism as a form of protecting the public purse, but the public pocket. And so I think, yeah, at that stage, I would not be surprised if there are issues that come out later that involve either party. But we're sticking to the facts regarding these big contracts that were being investigated.
Take us back to where it all started with, obviously, Rapport breaking the big news in 2015, because that's the other reason why we have you here, Pieter, is that you, of course, have that historical memory of where it all started before this train stopped moving.
No, absolutely. And I just I saw on Twitter here quickly, I'm being attacked by Mr. Lucky Montana again, who seems to be under the impression that I've been kind of neutrally fed by Mr. Molefe with all these documents and information, which is not the case really. So we started looking at PRASA even before the train issue came to the fore. We were tipped off by individuals who worked at PRASA, people who were concerned over the management style of Mr. Molefe, that there might have been property developments, property transactions he was getting involved in that seemed to be connected to Transnet tenders. That was the very first PRASA story we did. And the basic story was that there was a lawyer called Rian van der Walt. We named him in reports, Pretoria lawyer. And he bought Mr. Montana's property in Parkwood, Johannesburg for double the market value. I was then able to go and trace back Mr. van der Walt's shelf company and link it to a company called Siangena Technologies, which just happened to get a 4 billion rand contract from PRASA for CCTV cameras at the same time. And that kind of led to sort of a lot of other property transactions, also linking Mr. Montana and this Rian van der Walt and Siangena Technologies in this very odd sort of property transaction relationship, which they to date haven't been properly been able to explain. Then we also, that kind of led to further tip-offs, and then the issue of the trains landed on my desk. Once again, no contact with Mr. Molefe at that juncture whatsoever. I'm working with sources on the ground, people who are engineers, people who work at PRASA and who are now forced to make these locomotives work on our rail lines. And lo and behold, the rail safety regulator did find that these trains, for the large part, cannot operate where they were supposed to operate on the South African rail lines. That led to further investigations. Now we start looking at the money flows. And we have been able to link payments of 80 million rand that went to a lady called Maria Gomez. I went to a house here in Sandton. I knocked on a door. I tried to speak to some of her neighbors. She wasn't there. And her neighbors asked me, oh, that's strange. Are you here about President Zuma's visits? So now we have a strange self company that got 80 million rands of payments from this company that won the contract to supply these tall locomotives. And there's a link to President Jacob Zuma. It's not the only link. We can speak about further links to President Jacob Zuma. So I think what's happening, ultimately, there's a can of worms that's being uncovered here. And there are very powerful people who are desperate to quash these investigations.
What does one say when you potentially get a nice gem like that when a neighbor asks a question that they probably shouldn't be asking?
Do you know what?
Like, what do you say? Oh, yeah, I'm here.
It just absolutely,
when is it coming?
Yeah, and in journalistic terms, it makes every single red flag go up and you just immediately peaked. You know, you just kind of learn, like, I wasn't actually even aware of the Jacob Zuma link at that stage. And, you know, there you have. All of a sudden, it makes sense. The other Jacob Zuma links come into play and you're sitting with a picture where you can actually look at a network of pillaging at PRASA that just seems to go back to all these very connected, powerful people.
Amazing. Like so many of the stories involving scandal in this country, the detail can be mind-boggling. And in Peter Louis Myburgh, we have someone who writes very lucidly about these issues and makes you feel like you're reading a mystery novel. Sadly, it is reality, and that means that you've got to have tears in your eyes at the impact this will have on our country. If you've got a question for him, you want to make sense of it, there are pieces of the puzzle that you'd like to make sense of, just give us a call on 021-446-0567. That's the Cape Town number, and in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702. We've got a call on the line from Musenberg. Peter, hello.
Hi. I just want to know something. This thing going on with China Rail, all this corruption and everything, how far is the case going? Do anyone know? Because it seems like it's like a dead end horse, if I understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
The corruption of you know.
Thanks for the question, Peter.
Yeah, so that's the other issue. That's the Transnet tender for locomotives. So we just have to be mindful of not confusing the two. So we've got the PRASA contracts for new locomotives, and then their sister state-owned rail company, Transnet, is also procuring a lot of locomotives. And certainly, you know, through some of our work, Amabunganis, there's equal concern over the financial sort of trails that flow from some of these contracts. And China South Rail certainly is one of them. We have been reporting lately that some of these locomotives that have been coming into the country are already providing significant problems. So, yeah, there certainly seems to be a lot of grounds for looking at that further.
14 minutes before 11. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and take more of your questions. If you want to SMS a question, you can do so 31702 31567 or just give us a call, and you can also engage News 24 investigative reporter Peter Louis Myburgh, who's with us, and we're trying to make sense of PRASA both in the moment but also the backstory of what has led to this point. We're trying to make sense of various aspects of the PRASA mess. It will take more than just this conversation. We'll probably have to bring Peter Louis back for two or three more installments, and we'll keep tabs on this story. So I've got a couple of random questions for him as I'm trying to make sense of it. If you have as well, there's no such thing as a dumb question. Call us right now. He's been with this story from day one, 011-883-0702. And of course, in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Collins Letswalo. He basically became a household name when it, you know, surfaced that the guy wanted to allegedly, obviously, get millions more than he should, having been seconded to this position. Who is he? Where does he come from?
Yeah. So Mr. Letswalo used to work at the Department of Transport. And it was on the insistence of the minister's office that he be seconded to PRASA. At that juncture, I think it's quite interesting and important to mention now, is that the PRASA board weren't all too keen on Mr. Letswalo's appointment. There is now letters to and fro from between the two departments, between Mr. Molefe's office and the department, that kind of indicates and hints at this tussle between the minister and Molefe's office over Letswada's appointment. They had a short list of very capable people who were ready to step in and take over as a permanent CEO, not only as an acting CEO. I think it's about time we also start moving away from these constant appointments of acting CEOs.
You know, a lot of actors, yeah.
There's a lot of
government sounds like it's a creative agency rather than the state.
Yeah, I think that the acting is maybe a very apt way to describe it. They're only acting to be CEOs. But so, you know, I think Mr. Letswalo was kind of pushed in to the PRASA board, and he was not welcome there. There were concerns over his allegiance to the former CEO, as well as to the minister's office. And I think ultimately there was somebody made a comment the other day, you know, these kind of big companies, these state-owned rail companies, they can only really properly function if the board and the executive management are let to do their jobs. And I think that's where the concern was. You know, there was a lot of talk of outside influence coming in with Mr. Letswalo's appointment.
Now, like all good investigative reporters, you try and stick to the facts, right? I like to mix them up with speculative comment. That's my part of the media. But I just got to ask you, though. I mean, given how much you know about this story, this Collins debacle in terms of the guy's salary, that's obviously not the real issue, right? That must be a ruse for something else.
I think it's become
a
bit
of... In terms of the various actors in the story.
I think if you look at the bigger issues at play, I think it's very strange that has now become the sort of central focus point. I think we've been looking at issues that involve billions and billions of rand of expenditure from PRASA. On many occasions, these expenditure was accompanied by money that flow to people who shouldn't have been getting that money, very powerful people. So I do think somebody has very successfully used this salary issue to create a new drama and a new sort of conflict that led to the board's demise ultimately.
But at the same time, I mean, I don't want to be unfair here, but I am ruthlessly honest. When the guy does speak, he sounds like a bit of a clown himself. He doesn't exactly invite confidence.
Exactly. You know, I think that's always a thing. If you at least listen to somebody like Mr. Brian Molefe, for instance, you know, it's somebody who's very sort of well-spoken, to the point, and
he's more a tragic figure than a clown.
Yeah, I suppose so, you know, but I think like ultimately maybe we can't tell everything about the manner
that's
in which somebody
true.
Speaks.
No, that's true.
But, you know, the management sort of shortages were there in other issues as well. I think they kind of link up to the manner in which he expresses himself. I mean, you've got to come across
that's
as somebody
true.
Who's confident and knows his stuff.
Yeah. Okay, we've got two callers who want to also engage you. And unsurprisingly, and I think it's important that we keep our eyes wide open as these kinds of stories surface. Before I take Togo and Dawn, I just want to take you back to something you said at the beginning, Peter Louis, which is when that Tunny was asking you, are you here about Mr. Jacob Zuma's visit? And you said we can talk perhaps about how JZ features in this story. How does he?
Okay, so if I can briefly break it down, there are multiple sets of Jacob Zuma fingerprints all over these PRASA contracts. And this is why these investigations are now being canned and why the board is getting rid of. I firmly believe that's the situation. Firstly, one of the companies, there's a company called Similex, which actually only exists on paper. It's a small little shelf company whose sole director is a woman called Maria Gomez, Angolan citizen. She managed to squeeze 40 million rand out of PRASA by invoicing Swifambo Rail, which is the supplier of these tall locomotives. They paid her, and 40 million rand disappeared into a hole, and nobody can explain it. It doesn't look like a consultancy agency. Nobody can explain what she's been doing. I just went to her CIPC registered address for this business to go and see what this Similex is, which is earning these beautiful amounts of money from these state-owned entities. And lo and behold, I knocked, it's a complex in Sandton, a residential complex, very plush, by the way. And couldn't get hold of her, just buzzed some of the other buzzers and got somebody on the line, and the lady said, oh, okay, well, you're a journalist, then surely you must be here for regarding President Jacob Zuma's visits. And I'm like, no, well, I'm not sure what you mean. So what can you tell me about that? And she says that, no, on occasion, they wouldn't really make a secret of it. The president rocks up there in a massive cavalcade, blue lights flashing, black vehicles, you know, causing quite a scene. The whole complex is basically filled up with vehicles. And then he stays there for 4 or 5 hours at end. And I think as a president, we shouldn't necessarily be nosing into somebody's personal affairs, but I mean, surely when there's now also this issue about the money flows from a public entity, now we can start asking questions. what is the relationship between the president and this lady who's managed to get such grand amounts from PRASA? That's the one fingerprint. There's another fingerprint. So PRASA's also been, they dished out a contract for 50 billion rand to an entity called Gibela. That's primarily made up of French manufacturing giant Alstom. They are making passenger rail trains for PRASA at present. And I managed to track down a company that is owned by Talente Mieni. That's Dudi Mieni's son. And he managed to also invoice Gibela. He's getting money out of Gibela. He was a Gibela shareholder, actually. And when I found the share register for this company set up to milk PRASA, in a word, the registered address he put down was none other than President Jacob Zuma's Forest Town house in Johannesburg, where he still stays.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls before we run out of time. Togo, hello.
Hi, Hisibis. My question is, does your guest have an idea why the former acting CEO was not appointed, or the other ones not appointed, and for another acting CEO to come and run the organization the way that he did in the couple of months he was there?
No, surely.
And why is he? And why is he not there? Because he used to be a COO before he was asked to be an acting CEO.
Yes, at the Department of Transport.
Okay.
Yes. So basically, from my understanding, is that the board can provide a short list of candidates to the Department of Transport, and that has to be vetted and then approved by the minister's office. I've seen correspondence which kind of points at the minister's department or the minister's office having received such a short list, but then stalling on actually going ahead and giving the final nod to one of these candidates. And then at that kind of juncture, the appointment of a acting CEO was then put on the table, and Mr. Letswalo stepped into the scene.
Thank you, Togo. Let's go to Cape Town. Don, hello.
Hello, it's Don here. My contribution is that about a few months ago, I received a request from an insurance company in America to arrange for these locomotives to be inspected on site, because they were to be insured on site during the time before they were handed over. About a week ago, I got another request from the States asking me to stand by to arrange for them to be inspected once again before they return to the States.
Oh, my goodness. And are we talking about the Afro 4000 locomotives?
We're talking about the locomotives from the States. I'm not in my office. I'm in my car. You can phone me again later if you want more information. I can tell you where they were standing.
No, we certainly will.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Thank you, Don. We'll put you in touch. We'll give you Don's details, and Olwazi, just take it down. It's Don Oliver in Cape Town. Fascinating. My goodness, the shifting stands here. Amazing. I don't know how you keep up with it. Let's take one more call. David.
Hi, you serious? Thanks for taking my call. Just your investigator there. I read an account that a decision was made to change toilet seats on about 70 locomotives. And apparently it was done at a cost of 400,000 rand per seat.
Yes.
So I think we were looking at about 40 million rand to change the toilet seat.
Absolutely.
Could your journalist confirm whether this actually happened? Because that just smacks of something of the highest order.
Thank you, David. Spot on. Thanks for pointing that out. So that actually did occur. Once these investigators started really digging into process finances, they found variation orders that were signed off on by Mr. Montana's office. And one of these was for 70 toilet seats at an amount of 42 million rand. And you have to keep in mind, these locomotives do not have toilet seats. And Mr. Montana seems to, his logic is that they honor toilet seats. How can we say they sign off on 42 million rand? But that is the problem. They honor toilet seats. So where did the money go?
Down the toilet. We've got 1 minute left. I want to take that opportunity to give the public a sense of how investigative journalists work. For you, what are the stories, the aspects of this story that are most important? As we're speaking here, what questions are keeping you excited, nervous, and anxious on this particular story? Where are you keeping tabs?
Yeah, I think for me always, I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think we kind of act as a tool that's a bit of a guardian of the public purse, you know, and I think we have to be very vigilant about the wastage of money. So my question and the burning question is still, Where did these monies end up ultimately? There's still a lot of questions around that. There are vast amounts of money that were channeled out of these contracts, and we are pretty sure they landed in the pockets of some very prominent and well-known politicians.
Peter Louis, thanks for your insights.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.